John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Let me ask you a question. We had an amnesty for illegal immigrants back in 1986. It was called Simpson-Mazzoli. Do you think America, 25 years on or more, do you think America is a better country because we did it? That's a question I'm going to ask Alvaro Vargas Llosa. Mr. Llosa is the author of the just-released Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization, and America. He thinks immigration is almost always a good thing for a country, both morally and economically. It's good to have you on the show, Mr. Llosa. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so let me ask you the question I just asked our listeners. And I'll give out the phone numbers for them as well. 206-421-5757, outside King County, 1-888-312-5757. The Simpson-Mazzoli amnesty from 1986 resulted in a almost quadrupling of illegal immigration. Do you think that has been beneficial to the United States?
I don't really accept the premise, I'm afraid. I don't think what caused the rise in illegal immigration was the amnesty. What caused it was simply that the demand for workers in the 90s and in the first part of the 2000 decade, which was a time of boom in the economy, far exceeded the number of people that were allowed in legally. That would have been the case with or without the amnesty. I mean, the amnesty essentially took care of the problem back then, but didn't anticipate what would happen later on. And that's a worry I have today with the current bill in the Senate. If we don't get those the future right, we only get the present right, we will find ourselves in the same situation. Essentially, we need to be careful when we anticipate the future that we don't cap the number of people we allowed in unrealistically.
Well, I think that a lot of people looked at the amnesty and said, geez, why undergo the hassle of emigrating to America legally? I mean, you have to wait in line, you have to pay a big fine, there are rules, there are regulations, et cetera, et cetera. Why not just jump the border and wait for the next amnesty?
Well, anybody who has been to the border, and I have been to the border, part of my research for this, for Global Crossings, for my new book, was all about that. And I looked at all the entry points I could and tried to really do on-location research to see how the system works. The risks these people take are a lot worse than any hassle they may have trying to come in legally. I think what happens is that they know they're not going to get a visa, or they try to get a visa and don't get it, and then they realize that if they can sneak in, there will be work for them. The other issue, of course, is people who do get a visa, a tourist visa, and then overstay their visas.
That's 40% of our illegals are from people who overstay their visas.
Definitely a very significant chunk. Well, all of that, I think, is really more a symptom than a cause. In other words, what it's telling us is the system isn't quite right. I mean, we have a demand for people from overseas. We need to find a way for them to come in legally. If we don't, they're going to come, you know, they're going to evade the law.
Tell me why we need to do that, Alvaro, because we already take more immigrants through legal channels than any other country.
Well, that's not quite right, but it I mean,
well, what country has more immigrants annually than the United States?
Many countries in Europe have a lot more. Proportionally, of course, not in absolute numbers. This country has a big population, so as a percentage of the population.
But I'm talking absolute numbers. There's no country that compares with the United States. We take in more illegal immigrants than anyone.
Yeah, maybe in absolute numbers, because, of course, the U.S. is a very big country. But relatively speaking, you have a lot of countries that take in a significant number of people in relation to their population. But the problem, I think, is this. How do you prevent that from happening? You can only do that if you seal off the borders, I mean, completely, you just create a fortress America.
Well, there's a difference between having a fence to keep people in and having a fence to keep people out.
It's still going to cost a lot of money. It's still going to be, I think, a permanent problem. I mean, once you set that up, you're going to have to take care of it forever.
So why not take down the walls that we already have up then?
Because I think it is a better way to do this. It's simply to have a realistic policy. I mean, let's say...
Well, hold on, because I really want to... Because this is a fundamental issue.
Yeah, but you either have a fence
or you don't. If you have a fence, it ought to be practical. It ought to keep out people you don't want coming in. It's just like if you have a fence around your property at home. You either have a fence that does the job or you have a fence with like a hole in it 20 feet down, and then you have more fencing and then another hole 8 feet down. People would say, what do you even have the fence for?
Yeah, I mean, but if you have a fence in the south, you'll eventually need the fence on both coasts, and then you'll need a fence up in the north. I mean, they'll find ways to get around it. Unfortunately, it's the way it works. So, I mean, is it worth it? Is the cost worth it? Is it really the best way to handle this? Is that what we want to do in this day and age with globalization and exchanges with the rest of the world? I think that if we have a policy that's more flexible, which means that in times of bonanza, we will get more immigrants. In times of recession, we will get much fewer. That will probably be a better way of regulating. I mean, just take this into account. From 2005 to 2010, net immigration came down to zero and arguably below zero. In other words, more people were leaving than coming in. Well, obviously, because of the prevailing
economy
conditions.
Had a lot to do with it, yes.
Yeah, of course. A lot to do with it, clearly. But that just shows. I mean, in the 90s, you had a booming economy. In the early part of the 2000 decade, you had a booming economy. So clearly, the economy was asking for more workers, so more came in. Then the recession came, workers left. And that's always been the case. It was the case when the dot-com bubble burst. It was the case in previous, at the end of the 80s, in that recession as well. It's kind of the way, I mean, it's really a market. That's the way the market works. So if you have a system that obviously takes care of the borders but doesn't place the main responsibility for immigration policy on just securing the borders but gets a policy that's more responsive to market conditions and necessities, I think it's a better way to do it.
You know, I'm trying to see this through the eyes, Alvaro. And again, if you're just joining me, Alvaro Vargas Llosa has a brand new book out called Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization, and America, published by Independent Institute, of which he is a fellow. And we're talking about this issue now. I'm trying to look at this issue through the eyes of 37-year-old American, never mind what his race may be, who doesn't quite have his high school degree, dropped out in the 11th grade, doesn't have a 401k. His health coverage is spotty at best. His wages took a hit during the recession, and his hours were cut back. What is the net result to guys like this from an amnesty that will bring on more illegal immigration? And the answer is, well, there's going to be a flood of people competing with this American for jobs that are already scarce. And, of course, when you have, as you point out, you're market-driven, so you know, Alvaro, that when you have a glut of workers for available jobs, you force down the wages.
Well, I mean, I can see your point, but the problem is you're starting from a premise that I think is questionable, which is the fact that the economy is a static thing.
It's not static. It's just not growing. It's not growing fast. It's not supplying jobs for people like this 37-year-old guy. What do you say to him?
Well, not now. And that's why we have much, much fewer immigrants today. I mean, again, as I said, more people have been leaving than coming in for the last 5 years. So they're not really at this point competing with them. If the economy gets better, there will be competition. But again, the market will grow because that's exactly the experience we had in the 90s and in the early part of the 2000 decade. Let me just give you one little example. Arizona, which is, of course, a very sensitive place for this discussion. And just before the bursting of the bubble, so we're talking about, 2005, 2006, unemployment was 4% and sometimes slightly below that. So we're talking really about full employment there. And about 10% of the workforce there was and continues to be immigrant. So clearly what was happening
now, when you
there
say immigrant,
was,
do you mean legal or illegal?
No, legal, legal immigrant.
Okay.
And there were probably a part of that was illegal, but mostly legal immigrants.
Okay.
So what we're seeing is that when the market, when you have, an economy that's doing reasonably well, those workers are helping create more jobs simply because they're helping the economy be more productive, produce more goods and services. And that's kind of the experience. Let's put it another way. Forget about immigrants for a moment. Just take into consideration what's happened since the Second World War in the last sort of 60 years or so. We've had a huge number of people join the workforce, the baby boomers and women in particular, who joined the workforce. So we've had about 100 million since then in these sort of 60 years joined the workforce. If your reasoning was correct, then they should have caused massive disruption in terms of unemployment, but really they didn't. There's never been sort of long-term unemployment that was significant in the country. Obviously, in certain periods due to recessions here and there, we had problems. But generally speaking, that has not created unemployment conditions in the country. Why? Because these people just add to the economy, and that creates more jobs. Obviously, it's hard to prove this into the future because it's easy to prove.
And again,
what
I'm talking
see.
About blue collar labor. Most of the women who joined the workforce weren't doing blue collar jobs.
But if you had a huge, massive number of blue collar people unemployed, that would have shown in all of these statistics, and that never happened. They were getting jobs as well. There is one small impact. I will definitely grant you that because our research indicates so, and there's a chapter on this in the book, which has to do with salaries. At the very, very low end of the scale, so to speak, what happens is when immigrants come in, they affect the wages of those who are already there at the bottom of the scale, native-born people here in the country. By about 1.5%. In other words, a 1.5% drop. But it's only temporary, and it's immediately offset by a net 1.8%
rise. Alvaro,
you
have time to take a few calls? People calling in.
Sure.
Again, Alvaro is the author of the brand new book, Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization in America. He thinks that immigration is a good thing, both morally and economically, for the United States and other countries where it happens. Give me a call, 206-421-5757, for your question for Alvaro, or 1-888-312-5757. Lots of questions for our guest, Alvaro Vargas-Losa. Alvaro, the author of Global Crossings, Immigration, Civilization in America, making the case for more immigration in the United States. You have kind of what I call a libertarian perspective there, Alvaro. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, I like to call it classical liberal because the libertarian word is kind of loaded, but I guess so, yeah.
Have you seen the work of Victor Davis Hanson?
No, I have not.
Okay, he wrote a very profound book. I know you're familiar with his work generally.
Yeah.
Called Mexifornia.
Yes.
Because in addition to being a classicist, and a scholar of the ancients, he also is a fifth-generation California farmer. And he talks about the practical impact of illegal immigration over the last 25 years. And he said that the practical fallout is that you have throughout Central California, where he lives, essentially Mexican villages. That this whole idea of a melting pot and assimilation, that's not happening. The idea of learning English, that's not happening. The idea of leaving your homeland behind as you become part of a new nation, America, That's not happening. And he points out, you know, the quality of the schools is down, crime is up, general conditions in the area and the valley are, well, you would look at it and say the area is declining, not getting better. And so he would probably say, you know, everything you're saying sounds so good on paper, but I'm just telling you, this is what it really looks like. It's not a pretty picture.
Well, I mean, I can understand why people would think that, because, yes, there are parts of...
No, he doesn't think it. He sees it.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, a lot of people say this who don't see it. But, I mean, I can understand why that would be an issue. However, let me say two things. First of all, I've conducted extensive research about this, because one of the points of my book was to try to compare what's happening today with what happened with the Irish, the Italians, the Poles, all of that, because it was really important to do that so that I could see if we were kind of departing from the traditional pattern, and this was something entirely new.
But there is a difference there, Alvaro, and the difference is when you came from Scandinavia, as my grandfather did at 17, he came on a ship not really thinking he was ever going to go back. In other words, he was leaving behind Sweden for America. And a lot of those who immigrate here illegally, especially from Mexico, not as much from Central America and South America, they still consider themselves Mexicans who just happen to be living in America.
Well, again, my research indicates by every measure they're behaving exactly in the same way as those other past waves of immigrants did. They're doing a number of things. First of all, it's a three-generation pattern. The first generation speaks some English, makes some progress, clearly not enough. The second generation is bilingual, speaks English a lot better than in this case, Spanish. The third generation forgets Spanish completely and speaks only English. The second generation does better economically than the first. Out-marriage is even stronger among Mexicans than it was among Italians. Second-generation Italians in the early part of the 20th century, for instance, 17% were marrying non-Italians in the U.S. In the case of Mexicans, it's almost 20%. And yes, you will have communities and villages where people speak Spanish, just like you had German communities in the Midwest and Asian communities in the California area as well.
Or Little Italy in New York.
Okay. Or Little Italy. But again, the general trend is towards assimilation and acculturation. Of course, if you have first-generation immigrants coming in on a consistent basis, you're always going to have a little bit of that, certainly. But the pattern is one of assimilation. Now, I will grant.
Well, hold on. Let's get to the
you.
Phone calls. We have all these calls rolling in here. Phil from Maple Valley, you're on with Alvaro Loza.
Hi, Joel. Thanks for the call. I just wanted to address this free trade argument because, you know, you hear a lot of the open borders people try to throw this argument around like it means something. And here's the issue. You can only have free trade with a mostly equivalent actor, economy, and society, because, you know, if you truly want free market capitalism across the earth, you'd have to average the lowest quality of standard of life with America. And I don't think we're willing to take a huge hit like that, especially considering the money that is being sent by a lot of these illegal immigrants is not circulating back into our economy in a meaningful way that affects the average citizen.
Do you have a question for Mr. Loza?
A corrupt society.
Do you have a question for Alvaro?
Yeah, my question is, how can you meaningfully say that this is free market driven when, in essence, we're basically being flooded by artificially cheap labor from a corrupt society that's putting pressure on these people to flee their own society? You know, they're not free.
Okay,
they feel like
we have limited time. Let's get his answer. That's a good question.
A great question. By definition, trade between two countries is almost always trade between two countries that are not equal. Otherwise, there's no need for free countries for free trade. People specialize through the division of labor in different things, and you trade with them. That's why the U.S. Buys from much poorer countries certain important things that it needs, certain raw materials, for instance, and primary goods, and sells or used to sell a lot of manufacturing goods overseas. Now it's not so many anymore because China is producing them. And the same with people, with immigrants. The Italians, the Irish, the Poles, all the different waves of immigrants who came to the U.S. came from countries that were much poorer than the United States, and yet they ended up contributing to the U.S. so much that almost nobody questions what they did. They're questioning Mexicans and you know, Hispanics today, but they're not questioning questioning those previous ways, and yet at the time they were, those countries were very poor compared with the United States.
All right, fair point. Thank you very much, Phil. Let's get a quick question and answer from Pete in Belltown, Seattle neighborhood. We only have about a minute. Go for it, Pete.
Hey, Alvaro and John. I'm glad to talk to you. Do you remember the case in the city of Bell, California, that burst onto the national news scene about 5 years ago?
Where the civil servants were paying themselves $500,000 salaries?
$700,000. Yeah. I think the top was like $1.25 million or something.
What is your question?
Order.
We're running out of time. What's your question?
Now, almost everybody in that town was Spanish-speaking. Most of them were immigrants. The vast majority were immigrants. And those officials managed to get themselves in that position by doorbelling in Spanish.
Okay. I understand your point. Alvaro, we're going to have you back on again. Great guest, and you really provoke a lot of questions and discussion, okay?
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I know it's a controversial topic.